Your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
With early detection comes early prevention.
Put lead in your pencil, make you feel like a champion.
Rise up again, let nothing keep you down. To live your best,
hear the urologist speak.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Think you're losing grip of your mind, don't give up on hope.
Don't be ashamed, it's time to take control. Get some help from the urologist.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Dr. Gregory Pinto, Bahamian urologist, and this is The Urologist Speaks. I'd like to, at the outset, thank DMAC for that very catchy jingle. I'm getting compliments about it all the time, and I think it is important to be relevant, and obviously music is very important for young people in trying to draw them in and vital information that may save their life one day or definitely improve the life of their the quality of their life and their longevity. My co-host, surgeon Dr. Wesley Francis, is running a little late. That's the life of a surgeon. I live it. Emergencies happen all the time, but he should be here shortly. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, as we just came out of September, where we stress the importance of prostate cancer. I see Dr. Wesley Francis walking in now. I'd just like to thank him for giving up his time. As I said, as a surgeon, we're always on the go and we never know when something's going to happen. So good evening, Dr. Francis. You are a surgical oncologist, cancer specialist, and it's vitally important that you're here because you're considered definitely the national expert on breast cancer, and we can even consider regional, and you're well-respected worldwide. Breast overwhelming in our society. But thank you very much for coming. And hopefully we can enlighten people and give future deaths from happening needlessly.
Well, thanks, Greg, for inviting me again. Sorry I couldn't make it last week. I was in the operating room. And good evening, Bahamas. Happy to be here to discuss topics that are important to every individual in the Commonwealth of Bahamas, in the region, in the world. And just happy to be here to share.
Okay, so we both will first say that we're here just trying to offer hope. We're trying to dispel inaccurate myths and misconceptions regarding health and disease. It's very important that we stress preventative medicine. Let's be more going down the track of being such an unhealthy nation. Let's start from early. We need to start from antenatal care, from maternal health. We need to make sure that pregnant women are not obese and they're eating right, and that when they do have children that are born in infancy, that we're making sure that they don't go down the road of obesity. So as a child, if you're going to be obese, you have about a 50% adult. If you're an obese adult, you have at least 70% chance of becoming an obese, adolescent, you'll be about 70% chance of being an obese adult. And we're going to highlight it, but many diseases, including breast cancer, including prostate cancer and all cancers, are strongly linked to obesity and being overweight. What is the link, Dr. Francis, in regards to being overweight, being obese, and breast cancer?
Well, Greg, before we... the first thing we'd like to say, you mentioned about prevention. You know, some cancers you can prevent. Breast cancer is, every woman has a risk of breast cancer just because they have breast. And some women have average risk, and that average risk is about 11 to 12% over their lifetime. And then other women, for whatever reason, for example, if they have family history, then the risk goes higher. If they have a genetic predisposition, for example, if they have a BRCA gene, then it's anywhere up to about 75 to 85% of their lifetime risk of developing breast cancer. And so prevention, again, is not the aim. For example, colon cancer, you could prevent colon cancer by getting a colonoscopy, finding a polyp. So there's a direct relationship between a polyp and developing colon cancer. So you remove that polyp, you don't get colon cancer. In breast cancer, that's a little different. So what we aim to do in breast cancer is to early detect. And the way you early, so that's why we are, I mean, there's so much information on the airwaves. I know we focus in October because it's Breast Cancer Month, but really, early detection is what is the primary importance in for women when it comes to breast cancer. Because if you detect breast cancer early, your survival rate is 97, 98, 99%. But obviously, if you catch it late, then that survival starts to creep down lower. Unfortunately, even in 2024, I'm still seeing people who actually come to the office, or you see them in the clinic, and they present very late or late stage breast cancer. And no matter where you go, if you present with real late stage breast cancer, there's really limited things that we can offer you. And sometimes, in most cases, we're just basically treating symptoms, and there's no hope for a cure. So that's why we're trying to push the spectrum, push that that pendulum to the let's catch you early. And if we can do that, then there's hope. There's unlimited amount of treatment when you're early. Now, there's certain other things that lead to breast cancer or increase your risk. And obesity is one of them, especially in postmenopausal women. And so the reason why is that your breasts, as it gets exposed to estrogen over your lifetime, increases your risk. And in the postmenopausal woman, your estrogen actually comes from fat cells. So whereas a young woman, your ovary is where your primary production of estrogen comes from. And as you go through menopause, the level of estrogen in your blood goes way down. But if you're in an overweight situation, then estrogen then increases in your bloodstream, exposes your breast more, and then that then therefore increases your risk of breast cancer. So this is why postmenopause is at a significant rate.
Well, I know studies have shown I had to go through general surgery before I started urology, so I've treated 14 years ago breast cancer, mastectomies, obviously going through treatment, and it's a very heartbreaking scenario to see, particularly premenopausal women younger than 40 being struck with breast cancer, particularly when they're at an advanced stage and they could have and should have had their whole life ahead of them. So I know there's a lot of advances in imaging that it's allowing us to pick up prostate cancer a lot earlier, particularly in the form of high-resolution 3D. I know that it's particularly useful in our population, breasts, where I know one study found that it's picking up about 34% more cases of breast cancer using the 3D mammography, and also the false negative has gone down to about 17% using 3D mammography. What is the role of MRI? So MRI, if you have a genetic predisposition, if you have BRCA gene mutation that's been proven in you as an individual or in your family, is there a role in terms of early detection for MRI?
So I always tell people, if you look at cars, right, the mammogram is like your garden variety car, but the MRI is the luxury car. And while MRI is far more sensitive, it's also more expensive. And it's a tool that picks up everything. So we do not use MRI to screen average risk people. So if you're high risk, especially if you have a BRCA gene within your family, or you have greater than two first-degree relatives, or your risk of breast cancer, which is, can be calculated to be higher than 25% of your lifetime risk, then those are the people that we recommend that get MRI in addition to, not separately, but MRI in addition to mammogram. So definitely patients with BRCA gene mutations, because their risk, their lifetime risk is greater than 70%. And anybody with significant first or second degree, first degree relatives, and if they're calculated risk, and this risk can be calculated when you sit down with your family practice doctor, your GP. And this is an important reason why it is that you have to have a relationship with your GP. And that, because that's where really the screening starts. It's not just mammogram alone. There are different components to screening. Initially, there's the breast self-exam. Then there's the clinical breast exam, which your physician, your primary care physician would do. And then add on top of that is imaging, and that's the mammogram. And if during that that encounter, they calculate your risk to be over 25%, then there's the additional screening with MRI. And so that's the role of MRI there.
So I know that our genes are our genes, and we're born with the genes. We can't undo the genes that we have, but there are modifiable risk factors. And we mentioned obesity. Diet is also important. Across the board, if you're obese, whether you have prostate cancer, uterine cancer, testicular cancer, kidney cancer, colon cancer, if you're obese, you're going to have you're not going to fare as well as someone who has a normal body mass index. You're also going to have a higher risk of recurrence and overall a higher rate of mortality. So what we can do, and we need to stress this from youth, from the level of infancy, even for parents, that we need to get exercise, we need to eat right, and we need to make sure that we are not overweight or we're not obese. We look at even risk factors in the WHO, World Health Organization, will look at modifiable risk factors. Just looking at diet alone, they found that a class one carcinogen comes in the form of just red meat and processed meats such as bacon or even going to class two ground beef. But red meat and processed meat are as great a risk, according to the WHO and numerous studies, as smoking or asbestos. So the things that we can do, if we, as a nation, we're the fourth highest rate of obesity per capita in the world. If we can change that trend, where we can modify our diet, modify our way of thinking, get exercise, make sure that we have a normal body mass index, get our annual physicals, reduce our red meat and processed meat intake. Obviously, we don't want to smoke cigarettes or cigars. I catch hell when I come on the radio or I go on a television or write in a newspaper about the numerous middle-aged men or even younger men who will, at the end of the day, the routine is they're going to smoke a cigar. They're going to have a glass of vodka or rum and coke, or they're on the golf course with their buddies smoking a cigar. That exponentially increases their risk of numerous cancers, increases their risk of coronary artery disease, increases, just from a urologist's point of view, increases their risk of bladder cancer and kidney cancer and prostate cancer. So we can do things. We don't have to have a fatalistic attitude that our genes are, unfortunately, we have one of the syndromes, whether it's Lynch syndrome or BRCA gene mutation, that we're inevitably going to get breast cancer, we're inevitably going to get prostate cancer. As you said, if we can pick up prostate cancer early, 100% survival. If you can pick up breast cancer, 97, 98. If somebody has a very strong family history of breast cancer, and we've tested them and they found to have BRCA gene mutation, what's the role for prophylactic mastectomies? What's the role of prophylactic oophorectomy, removing ovaries, or hysterectomy, because you're at risk of other cancers?
So people who are a part of the high-risk families, okay, and they're known to have a BRCA gene. Now, there are other genes that can lead to or cause a high risk of breast cancer, So when you have this high-risk syndrome, there are a number of things that you can do. First of all, once you have identified that and you sit and you have this discussion with your family practice physician, you can adjust your risk by medication. And patients with BRCA can take medication, and that medication is tamoxifen, especially in premenopausal women. And that's been shown to reduce your risk of developing breast cancer, right? So that's pharmaceuticals or that's medication. The next thing is, well, intensive screening, and we've already talked about that, adding MRI to mammography on an annual basis. The third thing that can be done is called is risk reduction surgery. And a lot of women actually elect to do this. And so if you know that you have a 70, 80% lifetime risk of this, of getting this, you know that you have this gene, you would have been tested, you're positive, and you absolutely sure about that, risk reduction surgery has saved lives. And I know people who are in families who would have had risk reduction surgery and they would have lived, and others who would have not had and they go on to develop breast cancer. And so risk reduction surgery is where you remove all of the breast tissue. And removing all the breast tissue doesn't take away 100%, but it reduces it by 99%. So you reduce your risk to just a 1% chance of you actually getting breast cancer. And a lot of women elect to do that. Nowadays, with the advancement of surgery, I mean, people may think that mastectomy could be very disfiguring. But right now, we have plastic surgeons that are phenomenal, that can reconstruct the breast immediately at the same time. So you go in, get your risk reduction surgery through bilateral mastectomy, and you get immediate reconstruction. And you live a long life without having the worry of developing breast cancer. And I think a lot of women do elect to do that. There was one time, I think it was Angelina Jolie, who actually did that. And I think when she did that, you saw a lot more women going and getting tested to make sure that they didn't have this BRCA gene. And then if they did, they went on to have risk-reducing surgery through bilateral mastectomy. So it's something that can be done. So again, it's a three-pronged strategy. Intensive screening or aggressive screening, two, medication, and the third thing is risk reduction surgery.
And why do you think we have such a high incidence of BRCA gene mutations? I mean, I know we have a very small gene pool. What is the answer? How do we overcome this? I mean, do we need to increase our population through immigration? I mean, these are radical thoughts.
That's going to become a political thing, and I ain't going there with you, right?
But the issue is that we have a small gene pool.
It is a small gene pool.
And we just keep it as a small gene pool, Gregory, and we have these gene mutations. It's not going to get any better.
Let me tell you, in Bahamas, if you ever try to do trace family trees, right? The family trees go all over the place. It's not the neat family trees that you find. And that's the problem. It is a small gene pool. I mean, there are ways to do that. But again, that's a talk for another day. But certainly, it's about knowing your status, right? And again, you touched on things or on a concept that I'd like to reintroduce. And that's modifiable versus non-modifiable risk factors. So we talked about you being female is a non-modifiable risk factor. Having a BRCA gene is a non-modifiable risk factor. But certainly obesity is a modifiable risk factor. Alcohol consumption is a modifiable risk factor. Sedentary lifestyle, that's a modifiable risk factor. And all of these things lead to overall healthy living and reduces your risk of breast cancer. You know, I give talks on breast cancer all the time, and I always reference a study that was done in Calgary. And Calgary is where I did my surgical oncology fellowship. And the researchers in Calgary looked at exercise, and they even looked at housework. they looked at women who did more and more housework, and that actually counted to exercise, and they and that then reduced their risk of breast cancer. So any kind of movement, really, it's not just being out there running treadmill or walking, any kind of aggressive work. It's about that movement. It's about getting the activity or burning those calories, even with housework or whatever kind of work that you can do. I mean, climbing stairs. So it's something that you can incorporate into your lifestyle. And I think it's about having that healthy lifestyle, not necessarily running the pavement every day. And that was the whole rationale and the whole conclusion of that study. You know, so
I mean, for postmenopausal women, we mentioned that obesity really increases the risk of developing prostate cancer and then increases the risk of breast.
He's a prostate guy. Yes, you got to understand. You know what I mean? He loves prostates.
Exactly. Okay, but even though I remember from my years of general surgery that as a postmenopausal woman, your chance of getting breast cancer is increased by about 11% for every 5 kilograms, which is about 11 pounds. So we need to stress women as they get older, they need to even be more active. They need to watch their diet in their retirement years. That's the time where they really need to go to the gym. They need to go on those walks. They need to.
And it's harder. You know, it's harder. Yes. I mean, you know, we're not going to be judgy here today. You know, it's a hard thing. I think a lot of people struggle with weight. Some of us here too. And it's a mental thing. Listen, man, sometimes getting out of the bed in the morning and having to go and do exercise, that's hard. But after you do it, you feel real good. So you have to be intentional about it and know that you are, there's a goal you're trying to achieve, and it's hard. And we know that it's hard for women, and men too. As you get older, women tend to put on weight as they get older. And so you have to be that more intentional about activity, intentional about calorie restrictions, and intentional about how you prepare your meals. I mean, you know what our diet is composed of. And them Sunday, 2-3 meats and piece of rice, macaroni and stuff, that goes a long way. And so it's just you have to be intentional about it. If you're not, if you're just being passive and think it's going to happen, it will not. Like anything in your life, right? And so we want to emphasize things that can be modified. And being intentional about exercise, intentional about diet is something that people have to do.
Well, I know that. Well, let me just divert for a moment. You mentioned studying in Calgary. I know you studied also in Detroit, and that you've. I know you're very humble, but you've reached the heights of your profession, and you are a success story. So I think what we want to also do is not just talk about the physical health. We don't want to just talk about the mental. We want to talk about mental health. We want to talk about stress management. We want to talk about anger management, particularly for men, conflict resolutions. We're losing a generation because of senseless murders, because of violence, because of men going down the wrong road to a life of crime and spending decades in prison and just never recovering from that. Women losing their way with teenage pregnancy and, again, going off and diverging to a path that could have been very different. But I think it's important to have role models, and you are an important role model. I mean, you and I are in the same set, and decades ago when we were in high school, it's the whole mentality of the society is that for young boys, for young men, adolescent boys, academics are not stressed. It's seen as a form of weakness. You're seen as soft. It's frowned upon, looked down upon, instead of in other societies, where you're filled with adulations for achieving great academic success, and it can change not just your life, but it can change generations. So I'm sure that you know that even for myself, my children are going to have more opportunities, a better life because of my sacrifices, yours as well. But how do you think we're going to change that mentality that young boys, whether they're 7 years old or 15 years old, don't stress the importance of academics. And
well, yeah, you know, Greg, I'm happy that you brought that up, because I think men have a responsibility, right? And that responsibility is to mentor younger men. And I think that's the way, and we have to be intentional about it. I keep using this word, intentional. I grew up in Second Street, the Grove. I came from very humble beginnings. I went to Government High, and I always like to say not the Government High that people talk about, the one in Yellow Elder. And, you know, I grew up during that era where there was, the crack epidemic. But in my local community, I had role models, and I'm going to call some names, and I hope these people are not embarrassed, but there's a gentleman, Wade Smith. Wade Smith was a fireman, and I think as a young man, he mentored me, and I kind of was adopted into that family. And, you know, Wade lost his mom, Darma Seymour, and my condolences to that family. But I grew up under them. And he was a good role model to me. I went to school, and I had teachers who were role models to me and who helped me along the way. And I got to give a shout out to your dad, Alan Pinto. Alan Pinto, I met in the 11th grade. And Alan Pinto was a mentor, a role model. And not only that, he helped me. And I'm going to say this, and I hope Mr. Pinto doesn't feel a way about this. I didn't have the resources to pay for GCEs back in those days. And I don't know if you remember this, but he actually paid for my GCEs because I couldn't afford it. And I think those of us, because at the time, I mean, I came from a very poor family. And you know what? There was an intentionality to his involvement in my life. And he continued to have that involvement in my life through college, through medical school. And I think that's why you and I are so close. But I think all men in the community need to be able to be a role model, mentor other men, other young boys, because they're going to emulate what they see. I saw the work ethic that Wade had, and so I emulated that. I worked in it. I saw, I know how I felt when I did well in school and when Pinto rewarded me and Miss McCarty and they all rewarded me and showed me that this is a way to go. And so I felt like excelling, succeeding, and it was reinforced. And that continued reinforcement just kept me pushing and pushing and pushing that I went to med school. And so that's what we need to do as role models. We need to mentor and be intentional about other, young boys.
Very inspirational. We'll continue this talk, which is very important. We need to save a generation of young boys and girls for a better Bahamas. This is The Urologist Speaks with Dr. Gregory Pinto and surgical oncologist Dr. Wesley Francis.
Hey, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing these knives to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
But he fooled with Joe girl.
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't bark down for nothing. So that means you got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you on?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. You gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I work?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pen from them, and they can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you said.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small.
can name it, we can print it. Just give us a call.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is the Urologist Speaks with Bahamian Urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and Bahamian Surgical Oncologist. And as far as I know, you're the first surgical oncologist fully qualified in the Commonwealth of Bahamas. And coming from your humble roots, I think we can applaud you for that. And you are a bastion of hope for young men who don't have a silver spoon in their mouth and maybe don't know where their next meal is coming from. So we need to save a generation of young men who are don't have a way forward and think academics are nothing but a weakness and studying has no role in their life. I mean, academics, success, perseverance, dedication, sacrifices paid off handsomely for both of us. We've seen the world. I never thought I'd be able to live in Cape Town, South Africa. I never thought I'd be able to see Strasbourg, France, or train in Hamburg, Germany, or anywhere in the world. And you've also been around the world at conferences and everything else. So, and we've met all cultures, but young men who are 10 years old, 12 year old, they don't see that.
Yeah,
they see that their friends are going to look down on them for academic success. I remember when I was at Queen's College, almost every year, every semester, you'd be brought up in assembly for honor roll, and it would only be myself and usually either one or two other classmates who were males.
Right.
The rest, just a sea of females. Even when we were in medical school,
it was
maybe 70% female. Now it's going to like 90%.
Yeah.
So where are we going wrong? I don't know. I mean, this D average is got to change, but it has to be a mindset where you need to study. You need to put the basketball down. You need to know that you can have a better life by dedicating yourself to and having a purpose and knowing that the hard work you put in now, just as in terms of your health, what you do now, you pay for later in life. And if what you sacrifice as a young male or even female, you'll bear the fruits later in life. We have a call come in.
Hi, yes, a pleasant good.
Good evening, sir.
Yes. All right. Good evening, both doctors. You know, I'm sitting down here and I'm just enjoying the conversation. I'm intrigued by both of you gentlemen's stories. But unfortunately, doctors, I think sometimes you are preaching to the choir. And my question is, as you have rightly said, Dr. Pinto, how do we get this message to the people that really need to hear it? Because most of the times, the people who need to get the message across don't listen to Guardian Radio. They don't run it in a particular circle. And so, Dr. Francis, as you said, you came from Second Street. Did you go back to Second Street and tell your story, write your story, publish it? I live in the inner city. I see these young men every day. I see those who have dropped out of school, whose parents are not even concerned about them. And they are just let loose to become whatever they want to be without any direction.
You know, that's a good comment. Thank you for that. And yes, I when I first came back, I used to go to Second Street on a regular basis. I took my children through Second Street just so that they could see where I grew up. I took them to see the house that I was in. I mean, my children, they're fortunate now. I mean, they didn't have to go through what I did, but I take them there just so that they can get a relevance and get some context of what it is. So, doctor,
just before you, I mean, have you ever thought about maybe just setting up a center and, you know, and naming it Dr. Francis Mentoring Center for Boys and Girls?
That's a good idea.
To leave a, you know, there's so many inspiring stories that are in our country that I think that, you know, they are unsung, they're not written down, and I think we need to tell our story. Our country needs hope right now.
True.
A young man are killing up, you know, one another with impunity. There seems to be no value for life. That, you know, you're just like an animal or whatever. There's no purpose. And if you and like doctor, because doctor, like me in 52, who have some modicum, some level of, you know, intellectual capabilities, and who are a little older and so on and so forth, we understand. We live this thing, but we need to reach our young man, and we have representatives that we elect every year, and it seems like they don't make a difference. There are centers, there are constituency offices that are just being paid for that could be utilized to bring these individuals, because a lot of these, like I told one of the prospective representatives from my constituency. You know, a lot of these individuals, they're unskilled. They can't afford to go to BTVI. They can't afford to partake of all the programs. You know, so we need to bring the programs to these individuals so we can get them, not to get where you are, but just to be able to take care of themselves and to at least show them that there is hope. You don't have to go the way of the others. Thank you, gentlemen.
And well, I thank you for those inspiring words.
Definitely.
And we both know many young men who are in our set who had very humble beginnings, had to overcome many obstacles. But the next topic I think we need to discuss is, even if we get them to that point where they understand the importance of academics, where they persevere, where they dedicate themselves, where they achieve success, go off and specialize and achieve professional degrees and priceless academic achievements that will improve our country, we need to talk about the glaring elephant in the room, and that's brain drain. How many of us, young men and young women, we all know them, we've grew up with them, went to high school with them, we know what they've achieved. Even I mentioned going up with, there were basically three boys in my class who would be in the honor roll every year, a few others now and then, but it was consistently the three of us. I'm the only one who came back. The other one is a PhD in chemistry in Switzerland. The other one is an interventional radiologist in Manchester, United Kingdom.
True.
We look at my own family. We'll talk about cousins. I have a cousin who's a professor of urology at Columbia University. I have a sister who went to Harvard and got an economics degree, who went and got a law degree at Yale. I have a brother who went to Columbia University in New York and went on and did internal medicine and gastroenterology, and they never came home. We all know stories
That's true.
So what is the reason that people don't come home? Is it the crime, do you think? Do you think it's lack of opportunity? Do you think there's a lot of black crab syndrome? Even on a personal note, I'll say, I did training throughout the world, but I went in Cape Town, South Africa, where obviously you think of apartheid. I had professors who didn't really realize apartheid was over. They would describe elderly men as boys who were black, and they would call a teenage Caucasian sir, and you basically, they were going to fail you until you prove otherwise. So you had to work twice as hard to achieve anything. When I was in Hamburg, Germany, you think of the Nazi regime and entrenched racism. But I would say through all the hardships, it inspired me to do better. I had to be the first in the hospital. I had to be the last to leave. And despite my being a foreigner, despite me being non-white, they respected me because of my work ethic. And you can achieve anything no matter what circumstances you're given. But when we talk about coming back, we both know it's not a very easy transition. I've said it openly, I think even on the radio, NASA Guardian Radio, I've said that I felt I've been treated worse coming back in this country as a professional than I did in Cape Town, South Africa, or even Hamburg, Germany, where there was entrenched racism. So we need to have a more welcome environment, a more welcome culture, where there's not going to be that backstabbing, where particularly in medicine, you know, you were bullied, so then you're going to bully the next one. I think it's changing with our generation. Yeah. I think that...
You know how the scriptures say, Greg, prophet is without honor, save in his own home. We all have those stories that we can tell. But I think, again, you got to be intentional about things. Even if seven go away and one come back, you know, I think about the story. And I'm going to call Dwayne Sands' name here because Dwayne Sands encouraged all of us to go off and train. Well, he sent a couple of us off, and I was the only one of the ones he sent to the U.S. who came back. But when I think about that, right, yeah, I came back. I mean, yeah, I got my nose bloodied, whatever. But you know what? We've done good for the community. I mean, we have our own training program now. And when I thought about it the other day, we've graduated 8 surgeons from our own local training program. And, you know, I'm happy to have been a part of that and to be kind of the catalyst to make that move. So even though, yeah, 7 of us kind of went away, 1 came back, but we still have to continue to make our contributions. And I'm going to, again, use this word intentional. We all have to be intentional about it. It's hard. You got to be a pioneer. There were those who came before you. They had to be pioneers. They got to grow. They got to work it up. And we always got to make it easier for the people that come behind us. So, you know, cool. Yeah.
Well said. We have another call coming in. Good evening.
Yeah. Hello.
Yes, good evening, sir.
Yeah, good evening, Dr. Pinder. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
I'm fine. I missed your program last month. I know it was Prostate Men Health.
Yes.
Last month. My scores were pretty good, but I have a concern. I know men who may be going on treatment, right? Is there a program the government has, or you may have, where you can make it affordable for these men to get their tests done in the Bahamas? And then, of course, you know, you have treatment. Is there anything that you guys are working on to assist men who doesn't have really the financial means to get treatment? Because the old saying was, boy, if you don't have the money, the poor will die. So what are you guys doing in the profession to get back to society to assist with men who cannot afford to get the chemo or whatever radiation for their prostate procedure? Is there anything that you guys are trying to do?
Well,
women are on par with a lot of
Yeah,
stuff.
Well, we're always doing that. I was on outreach to Cat Island in honor of my grandfather, Sir Cyrus Ulysses Davis, who died of prostate cancer, one of the inspirations that led me to become a urologist and not have other men see their grandfathers die a painful, agonizing, lengthy death. So, yes, yeah, so we went out to Cat Island. We tested through donations 134 men for prostate cancer through PSA blood screening, and I think it was nearly 80% of them never had prostate cancer screening in their life. And we actually picked up 14 cases of prostate cancer, and then we put them on the road to treatment. So NHI is a wonderful endeavor in terms of providing primary care, in terms of providing screening for everything from breast cancer to prostate cancer. I'm also, my office is at Oak Tree Medical Center. There, through our endeavor with CJ Atlantic, they're providing over 100,000 mammograms for free. So yeah, we're doing our part. We're slowly but surely. But even if you don't have finances, through the government system, you can provide. We have oncologists. We have radiation oncologists, medical oncologists. We have surgical oncologists, not just Dr. Wesley Francis, but Dr. Don Major. So finances are not going to prevent you from getting your screening, getting your cure, getting your management.
Okay, I appreciate that very much.
No problem. So I think we'll get a little bit more into just proactive preventative health. How are we going to change this trend of obesity, being overweight, and the scourge in our society? We'll talk more about that on the other end of the break. The Urologist Speaks.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
Hold on, sweetie. Mommy's sending a text.
But Mommy, my teacher said that you're not supposed to text and drive.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, look, Mommy, the Smith twins. Mommy, watch out!
In 2017, approximately 54 people died as a result of traffic accidents. A percentage of these fatalities occurred as a result of texting while driving. Just taking your eyes off the road for 5 seconds can increase your chance of crashing. Remember, even the smallest voice counts.
Brought to you by UB Radio and Guardian Radio 96.9.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and my guest co-host, surgical oncologist Dr. Wesley Francis. So we're trying to save a generation who seemed to, every year the murder rate goes up, every year basically crime is at an unbearable rate. It's affecting a quality of life, I think, as a nation. We're very stressed, and academics, I think, play a role in trying to save a generation of young men. And I don't know, as you say, one of the callers says, those are the people we're trying to reach. Obviously, they're not going to read the newspaper. They're not going to be listening to the radio. They're on the streets playing ball, doing whatever, getting into mischief. How do we reach out to them? It's not an easy answer. There's so many, the problem is so multifaceted. It just starts, I think, from the home. Obviously, you can go and preach all you want at school, the principal, the teachers, it can inspire all they want. But if you go home and you don't have an environment where you're encouraged to do your homework, you're encouraged to read, you're encouraged to have a good night's sleep, you're encouraged to eat right and have a healthy lifestyle. If you being poor doesn't have to be a mentality. It doesn't have to be a state of mind. It just can be just a brief period of your life where it can inspire you to greater things. And I've seen that many people from humble environments and beginnings actually have achieved greater things than people who've had a silver spoon and didn't have to achieve anything because their parents gave everything out on a silver platter. So for those who are in their inner city, I'm sure my brother-in-law wouldn't mind. He grew up in McCullough Corner. He's an orthodontist who's a professor at Harvard University. So unfortunately, we talk about brain drain. He also didn't come home. But your circumstances do not define you. Do not let hopelessness overwhelm you. You can always achieve if you believe in yourself. You always need to, as you said, try and find a role model. And you and I both try to mentor as many young men in particular. Obviously, women are doing better in this society than men, but we try to mentor as many, whether it's high school students, junior high school students, but I think we need to even start younger. But in terms of getting our educated professionals to come home, how can we change the trend? How can we, because I think if we can get, instead of 1 out of 7 coming back, we get 6 out of 7, we'll have a much better country and a much better future.
Well, I mean, it's all about having the opportunity, right? People have to want to come back in the first place, and I think most people do. Being able to start. You see, when you work in, for example, a first world country like the U.S., you have everything at your disposal, right? And then when you come back and you have to, you don't, your environment changes. And so it becomes difficult sometimes. But I mean, you have to have that, you have to be pioneers. I always say, I think a lot of us are pioneers, those who came before us, those who are now. And we have to work in a system. And as more people come back, that system changes. The system gets better, but we have to reinvest in that system. And healthcare, you know, the caller before talked about healthcare and talked about finances. How is healthcare financed? We have to invest in healthcare in general. I mean, healthcare really should be a right and not a privilege, right? And so, you know, the government. I know a lot of people beat up on the government, but the government puts a significant amount of funds in healthcare. I think they can do more. I think we have to try to control the waste in healthcare. I think it has to be better managed. All of these are real complex problems that have to be solved. I think we have people in the diaspora who can help us with those management. But again, getting them home, bringing them home, and you know, valuing them. And when you put a value on what people do, I think that is why that is when they would be incentivized to come home. We got to change the whole archaic HR rules in the public service, right? And modernize it. And then not only that, but I think even in our community, if someone goes away and they're bringing something back that is of value, we have to recognize that, well, you know, they can get paid for something that they do as long as they bring the value and they're changing the systems. So incentives change behavior. And I you know, that's a rule. If you can change people's or add incentives, people change. Incentives are not only always monetary. It could be other things, right? Families, you know, I came back home because I wanted to make a difference. And I mean, this was home. I felt like a foreigner in a foreign land, right? You talk about the things that you experienced. That I experienced some things in the U.S. too, and I didn't want to live in that. I wanted to live home, and I wanted to contribute. And so that's what brought me back. There has to be something that within us that wants to contribute to the land where we were born, where we grew up, and the families and the communities that are here. I think that has to be something intrinsic. But I think also there has to be some incentives. You have to get, people have to be valued. And in all kind of different ways. That's what make people come home. At least that's what I think, you know.
I mean, it's not perfect anywhere in the world. No. We have a very beautiful country. We have great potential. Unfortunately, we're squandering it in many ways. And we need to turn the trend. We want this to be an interactive show. I should have mentioned the numbers earlier. But you can call us at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 326-4316. 4259. So you mentioned learning from the diaspora. So we look to the south at Jamaica, and we both know what the culture is there. You're basically incentivized to achieve academics, achieve a profession, and then leave. Go on to greener pastures, leave Jamaica. And that's, we don't want that to be the trend here. And it's slowly happening where you get your academic success, you get your university acceptance, you go on and do graduate school, you go on and get your PhD, your master's, engineering, medical degree, subspecialty, and you don't come home. And that is basically, and I know we both have many Jamaican friends, that's their mindset. That's their goal, even put into them from a young age, that their parents want them to get out of Jamaica. They want them. And the road to that is academics.
Well, a lot of us do that too. I mean, I talk to a lot of patients, and they want their kids to go abroad. And they then, they don't want some of their kids to come back. But then there's a downside to that, because then you see a lot of parents who, when they get sick, they're alone.
Yes.
And, you're doing conferences over the phone with their relatives, because they're here. And so I think that's a mental strain on people. And so again, our families, we send our kids away. Listen, my son, I have a son, he's in Toronto, in Whitby, and he he's doing PhD. He wants to do a PhD in cell biology, and I think to myself, what is he going to do with that, right? But I got to. I'd like him to be here. And so people like us, Greg, we got to try to create environments or industries that people can come back home. And that's where the incentives are, right? And I think government and private sector people have to invest locally. And when you invest locally, then you create industries. The more industries create, more people will come back. And then more employment for people who are less skilled. You bring more skilled people in, because you created these industry, it creates other jobs too. And I think it's that industry creation that we have to now start to look at. We're educating a lot of our kids, sending them off, but we got to create an environment for them to come back.
All right, thanks. We have a call coming in. Good evening. Hello? Oh, we lost the call. So, yeah, it's important. I mean, do we need to basically pinpoint who are these individuals? Do we need to have an outreach, whether it's on the government level, whether it's from a Kiwanis Club or Rotary Club? Or,
Greg. We got to be intentional. It's the intentionality is what. If you're not intentional about certain things, it just doesn't happen organically. And we want to create industries for these young people to come back. I think we have promising young people out there. We have promising young people in the public sector and in public schools. I came from public school. I mean, I'm sure when I was coming up, people was talking bad about, kids then too. I was one of those kids they were talking bad about, right? Someone was intentional about, encouraging me, and I think we got to be intentional about encouraging others. And government has to be intentional about creating industries. Private sector people also got to be intentional about it. And we got to take away roadblocks to create those industries. And that's how the economy flows, right? We got to create things. And if we don't, then it becomes a problem. I think it has to business creating business opportunities need to it needs to be much easier to be able to do that. Getting access to credit lines has to be easy. You know how hard that could be sometimes, right? But that is what the new economy, the new Bahamas, that's the kind of things, and that's going to start with some legislation, some policy changes, some local processes changes, and that's what's necessary. You know?
I mean, you, looking at your success story, do you think you had to be self-motivating? I know you had some mentors, but when you went home, did you have an environment where academics were stressed?
No, it wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't stressed. I mean, I didn't come from an environment where I had folks or my folks encouraged me to do this and that and that. No, but I mean, I was self-motivated. But then, again, it's about incentives. Success breeds success. And I think when you find kids and you show them how they can be successful at anything, and then you just nurture that, people become self-motivated at that. You talk about crime, right? Crime, there's incentive for crime. You know, people continue to do crime because it provides them something. And that's why it becomes self-perpetuating. Academics can become that way. Sports can come that way. Other jobs can become that way. It's just whenever you can create in someone a desire to do something and they're rewarded by it, then they want to continue to go and continue to do it. I found success in academics. I was motivated by it. I felt like, from an academic perspective, like I was a world-class athlete. I was a world-class academic, and I wanted to continue to get better and get better. And I think more and more kids can be that way if we encourage them that way.
I mean, it can be done. We both have a colleague who's a good friend of ours who would tell stories of growing up on Miami Street and walking to the water pump to collect water for the family and having to work at McDonald's and pack groceries at the local food store. And
we can call his name?
No, he'll be upset.
Yeah, he can be upset.
He'll be upset. But, I mean, that man has gone on to live on Skyline Drive in one of the best houses there.
Live next to the former prime minister.
Exactly. Oh,
sorry to out you.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you can come from those humble beginnings, and obviously he had wonderful parents and siblings who encouraged him and a network of support. If you can come from those humble beginnings to the pinnacle of your own career and have be successful in business wise and in every other way,
all is not lost. And I would say all is not lost. And we have to encourage young people. We have to continue to be positively minded, create programs for kids in the community. I remember I was in Junior Achievers. That stirred in me some entrepreneurship. I was in Kiwanis Sponsored Youth. That helped me. I saw men who were businessmen, and they invited us to come to their meetings. All of these things had an impact, and I think we, just as the caller said, we need to learn to give back. And I think there are opportunities, many opportunities to do so. But all is not lost. I believe that we still have a generation. And sometimes everybody doesn't learn the same way. And we always talk about this D-average thing. That's just a way that you examine people, these exams. Maybe there's a lot of those folks can't do exams very well. There has to be another way to assess. They are, the whole community of people in that D-average aren't really people who can't function, who can't create opportunities for others, who can't be entrepreneurs. And so there's always hope, and we have to find the way to reach people and be intentional about it.
I mean, you and I have sacrificed tremendously. We both have wonderful wives who are with us through our training, and I think we never would have achieved what we achieved unless they were with us.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say my success is more so because of my wife than because of my own ingenuity or sacrifices. And I know the same with you.
Oh, the wife raised the kids while I was working.
Exactly the same thing.
And she had to work. I'd raise kids.
Exactly.
So
that.
You work harder than
so
me.
You, it's so just as important as academics is, yeah. is important to find the yeah. family. So important providing getting the right spouse is important. Who's going to support you through thick and thin, who are going to be with you when you have nothing in residency and now can enjoy the success that we have now. So it was been a fascinating talk. I thank you very much for being a part of it, Dr. Wesley Francis. And next week, we're going to have another enlightening talk on The Urologist Speaks. It's been a pleasure to be here. This is Dr. Gregory Pinto. And again, good night.